Blog Talk Radio.
Another Friday night's edition of Center Stage. I'm Gary Hines, your host. Tonight, y'all, we're just going to slow things down, and we're going to talk about what's going on in the news. There is so much going on. We were actually going to do this show last week, but I got a little under the weather and was not able to do it, but we ran a rebroadcast of what happened the night Emmett Till died last week, and if you haven't checked out that show, I suggest you You do, because there was a lot going on the night Emmett Till got killed, and there were some people that probably you wouldn't suspect as being part of the ordeal that were. So that's what we covered last week. But tonight, we're just going to look at some of the headlines that just jumped out at us, and we decided to cover them. We even talk about the spinach recall. You know, it looks like every so often, maybe every 6 months, we get a recall on spinach. Why is that happening? More recently, we got a recall on beef. I think it was 8.7 million pounds of beef was recalled. We're also going to talk about the Ukraine and Russia conflict. Are we looking at maybe World War III, you know, if this conflict is not resolved the right way? We also want to talk about Marissa Alexander possibly facing 60 years in prison once she goes for her second trial, which is crazy. No one was killed, and then she only fired a warning shot because she said she was in fear for her life. And that's in Florida again, so Stand Your Ground once again has failed us. So we're going to talk about the Marissa Alexander case. I think her new trial is coming up in July. And there's supposed to be a big rally in Tallahassee on Monday. Al Sharpton and Jamal Bryant, I think Benjamin Crump, and a lot of the others are going to be spearheading that that rally about Stand Your Ground in Tallahassee this upcoming Monday. Also, we're going to talk about, if you were not paying attention to the news this week, the Oversight Committee was basically questioning a Mrs. Lerner, an official with the IRS, and the chairman of the Oversight Committee actually turned off the mic of one of the ranking members of Representative Cummings, Elijah Cummings. And so we just kind of want to talk about how disrespectful that was, what that actually was all about, and what does it tell us about the process. We want to talk about all of that tonight. And we also want to talk about sustainable housing. I don't know if you're paying attention, but I catch a lot of things that maybe other people are not watching. But if you pay attention very closely, there's this marketing campaign that's moving very quickly about sustainable housing. Be careful when you hear the term sustainable. It sounds like a very cute and well-packaged word, but it really has a real tough punch to it, because sustainable development, sustainable housing, it all is under Agenda 21, and we're going to talk a little bit about tonight what Agenda 21 means, what it's all about, and how it's affecting your everyday life, from what you drink to what you wear to where you live, what you drive. It's all in there, where you're living. All of that is covered under Agenda 21, and we're going to talk about that tonight. And the last but not least thing we want to talk about tonight is there a gay agenda? And listen, for the record, y'all, I am not homophobic. I have gay friends. I have gay family members. And so I'm not a homophobic by any way, in any way at all. But I think what I am is someone who would like to have free choice to think what I want to think and believe what I want to believe without having it pushed on me. And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Is there a gay agenda that's being pushed on all of us? Now, whether you're gay or straight, you know, black, white, it doesn't matter. But are we being forced through media and plays, television ads, commercials, you name it, to basically be, I don't know, guinea pigs for a gay agenda? We're just going to talk about that tonight. But that's on down the road. First of all, I'm going to open the phone lines up to A.J. Houston. Good evening, A.J. We're flying together tonight. Mr. Buns is flying. Kufu Kush is working a night shift, and he's not able to be with us. So it's A.J. and I tonight. Good evening, A.J. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, Carrie? How you doing? You doing all right?
I'm better this week, AJ. I'm much better. I'm rested. I'm good. I was looking forward to this show last week because I'd done a lot of research about these topics, and I was under the weather last week and wasn't able to cover it. But there's so much going on in the world of news, isn't there?
Oh, man, that's what it is. And the whole thing about this year is anything you can think of bad, they put it out there. And I think it's really a scare tactic, too, because it's like, okay, look at the news. You want to hear something horrible, we don't have any good to tell you.
True. That is true. And, you know, AJ, I was back several months ago, something that I did not put on our list tonight, but I want to touch on it very briefly. You know, back several months ago, we covered GridX. I think it was called GridX 2, where they were talking about doing a basically a dry run on whether the grids could hold up to a whole lot of usage at the same time, or if we were basically hit with an outage from, you know, maybe a terrorist attack or something like that. And I was watching the news this week, which I don't watch a lot of news, y'all, but I was this week, and the news anchor said that on a certain day that the weather was going to be really cold, and she said, you know, they were asking people to conserve energy, and if they would, within a certain time frame, if they would use as little as they possibly could, maybe like do your laundry at night as opposed to in the daytime, and some other ideas that they were given. And I thought, and she said, because the grid was going to be really taxed that particular day due to the really cold weather. And one thing I know from doing these shows is elitists will tell you ahead of time what they're going to do. And so when she said that, it just jumped out at me that telling you in so many words that they're going to hit the grid, you know, at some point. And so that just caught me. Did you happen to catch that broadcast and hear that as well?
No, I actually read it somewhere, but I was like, you know, I completely understand, but it's like the weatherman is not always right, so how are you going to be right about the grid? You know, the weatherman is like, because this year they've been pretty, they haven't been right, but they've been, you know, arctic blasts. When it's cold in Oklahoma and Chicago and all this, they might as well say it's going to be cold here because their wind is just coming.
You know, they said this has been the longest winter ever. Ever.
This is the first year that they stopped calling it cold weather and stopped calling it whatever they wanted to call it. They started calling it arctic blasts, and everything had some origin of being from Antarctica, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this. I say, just because you change the language, you know, don't mean it at 30 below in Dallas is going to be something different.
This is so true. You know, I just don't know. The only thing, I could take some cold. I was born in a cold climate, and I'm one of the ones that you know, can't take much heat, but I can take some cold. And honest to God, I haven't had a hard time with this winter at all. But I'm wondering if this is an indicator of the fact that it's going to be a really hot summer, which would be a problem for me.
Well, you know, I was thinking it, but I'm not sure. My problem is they see all this stuff happening, and they still say there's no thing as, you know, a climate change. There's nothing to worry about as far as what we're emitting in the ozone. And, you know, it's like we have scientists that say there's no problem. I'm like, and I think during the last Arctic blast we had, they were talking about over like 3 or 4 million miles of ice in Antarctica had melted.
Okay.
So I'm saying when you start losing ice, and that ice is, that's definitely a problem. I don't care. You don't have to be a scientist to understand it. There's always been ice there, and you got all this new ice melting, which means that there's something happening with our climate, with our weather, with the sky. There's something happening somewhere that we need to take notice of.
Well, that too, and the fact that we have to also, you know, put in the equation, is it possibly weather modification? Is our weather patterns being manipulated? Because, you know, for those of you all that don't know, the government has the ability to manipulate the weather. Typically, it's supposed to be done only at wartime, but they absolutely can manipulate the weather. So just wonder, don't know, you know. And if you're like, say what, AJ?
I thought I was the only conspiracy theorist with that theory, because I've been, you know, the first time I heard something about Star Wars was on a science show I was looking today. Because, you know, Ronald Reagan spent billions of dollars building Star Wars, and nobody ever said what it was. So I only started thinking about it when we had, like, 3 or 4 hurricanes back-to-back in Florida. Then we had the one come and go. That was a little bit before Katrina. But all these and hurricanes went up the East Coast, and we was having hurricanes and adverse weather in places that they don't usually have it, at least not as consistently. So it was like somebody was trying to see if it worked. And I think if you, you know, like the commercials say, it's not nice to fool with Mother Nature.
I remember that.
And I think once you tweak it to see if you can play with it, I think everything is completely out of balance.
I think it's like creating a monster. You know, when you find out it works, you want to say, well, let me see how much rain I can make come down, and let me see how many hurricanes. You know, I just think in the wrong hands, it can really get that interesting.
I don't think you have to do much more once you start it, because I think once you create that little vortex and that little change of weather, it's a cycle. So when it's changing back, you've already distorted what it was supposed to be.
But see, you know, and this is, I think I heard or read somewhere where we've had the worst drought we've had in like the longest time, or we're this year, the drought is really, really bad. And so we got to wonder if some of this weather manipulation, if somebody didn't calculate the side effects, or did they calculate the side effects of what was going to happen when you manipulate the weather, then is that going to be a chain reaction to this and this and this? Because, I mean, we're going to feel it this spring at the supermarkets when you're talking about, you know, the worst drought in a really long time. You know what I mean?
No, but and the other thing is, a friend of mine went to go fishing at a place he used to fish all his life growing up, probably about 45, 90 minutes from here. It's in Texas. But he said when he got there, he had to ride around for a minute to see if he was at the right place, because there was no water. It was just dry land.
Wow.
And it was like where the lake would feed off to. So he said it took him about almost a mile. He had to drive a mile to find where the lake was, because there was no water. There was always water in all these places. So you're talking about a drought. So that's, you know, that's definitely something frightening to say, hey, that's a whole lot of water missing.
Well, we are in so much trouble. And, you know, and the thing is, for people who always think, well, you know, they're just conspiracy theorists, I think I suggest to you open a book sometime. You know, turn off the news and maybe just scan the internet for yourself on some of these topics, and always keep yourself with an open mind, because, you know, there's so much we don't know, so much we don't understand. And a lot of these things that are occurring, this stuff has been in place, you know, decades. And so this isn't stuff that, you know, that we just came up with. This is stuff that, you know, once it happened, they didn't just think of it yesterday and did it today. This is stuff that's just been in the making. You know what, and saying that to say, let's jump into sustainable housing. That's a great place, a great jump off place. I don't know if anybody's paying attention, but lately there's been a lot of advertising, and it really looks cute. I mean, if you don't see the bigger picture, it really looks cute when you see all of these little bitty tiny houses where they're showing you someone is dying to move into a 250 square foot house. You know, and I'm thinking,
when you send me that link, you know, when you tell me the information, I watched a special on TV probably some weeks ago where this lady was actually building one. You know, she said she was going to try it. So a couple of people came and started helping her build a house.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one guy that helped her build it. He said, man, you know, I thought it was kind of stupid at first, but after building and seeing how it worked, I might have to build me one of these. But I think it started with just them showing how it's done and showing the possibility, and then putting it out there, because everything starts off with like a suggestion, like we are, I guess, we have this affinity for, you know, like they used to say there, play the record backwards, you know, all the little things that we were supposed to be susceptible to.
Mm-hmm.
But it starts then, and everybody wants to do it.
Well, see, you know what? The thing is, y'all, if someone told me, hey,
I said 250 square feet.
250 square foot. It's 250 square feet. If somebody told me today, Carrie, you're going to have to give up the house you got, and we want you to move into 250 square feet, and that's where you're going to be from now on. Y'all, listen, I got so much stuff, not stuff, but stuff, that I would be, like, having the biggest yard sale because, you know, this is, you know, life over, I don't want to say how old I am, but over quite a period of time where you've accumulated things and you like, how do you downsize things that you love? You know, so I just don't see, and, you know, I've been in mortgage. I have a mortgage background, and I remember many years ago I started hearing the term empty nester and downsizing, and I thought, okay, whatever. You know, so people who were living in then 2,500 square feet, 3,000 square feet homes were all of a sudden saying they were going to move into 1,200 square feet because their kids were in college and they didn't need all the room anymore and it was just the husband and wife. So they were going to downsize. You remember that term, AJ? Everybody started using several years of downsizing?
That term started before NAFTA.
Okay. And NAFTA was about when?
NAFTA was President Clinton's term. So,
okay. But
that term started a long time before NASA downsizing because it was, you know, we add new terms, but then we started redefining the new terms that we added. So, yeah, now, I remember downsizing. Downsizing was 2% okay. And they used to have commercials, say, you know, about it too, you know. And now they have little car commercials where they're keeping the house, but they're adjusting the room or the size of the room that the person had before they left. You know, he'd say, where's my room? He'd say, oh, it's still right there. We just took a little bit of it for the kitchen. Like they added so much more to the kitchen.
I saw that commercial.
It's still the same concept. We're just tweaking it.
I saw that commercial. And the thing is, first of all, when you listen to these ads, be careful not to be conditioned to believe something that you don't even believe in. It sounds cute. and ideally, it's like, okay, if I was thinking that for myself, maybe so. But last time I checked, I don't want to live in 250 square feet. I just don't. I don't want my kitchen. I don't want my bathroom in my kitchen. So, I mean, if you got 250 square feet, that's just about what you got. And so, you know, a lot of these houses, they're showing them where they're on wheels and you can move them and, you know, you can put solar panels on the house so you don't have to pay any utilities. And I can just, okay, first of all, y'all, the government is not going to let you live for free. So some kind of way, they're going to figure out a way to tax you. And so when these people think that they can all of a sudden, you know, basically live off the land for zero, that's not going to happen. So if we all, you know, 5 billion of us or however many of us there is in the world right now decide we're all going to do that, then they're going to find a way to charge us for that. So, you better believe it. And so my thing is, think for yourself. And I think a lot of the advertising that we're hearing, they're telling you what to think. And if you turn off the TV just a little while, you know, a little less each day, you'll realize that you really don't think a lot of the stuff you think is somebody conditioning you to think a certain way. And when I start seeing those little bitty houses, AJ, I thought, you know, okay, one lady's making a house out of a crate, you know, the what do you call it, those pallets. And I'm thinking, I don't want a pallet house. You know, they're not going to make me believe I want a pallet house or I want to live in 200 square feet.
But the special I saw, the lady was, she had some other people helping her, and she was, when she first started, she was talking about where each room was going to be, and they were showing, you know, little progress she was making and when people was helping. And then the people that was helping was, like, getting more interested, like, oh, man, this is interesting. I like this. And I was like, no, I don't think I like it. But it was just that she had some other people co-signing that it was a good idea. And she said she was going to drive around the nation so other people could see it. And, you know, because it's a house on wheels. That's what it is. Just like you said, it's a house on wheels. So there's no land charges. You don't have any space for lease. You don't have anything.
way. I mean, you know, what do you do for the holidays? I mean, you can't invite no family over for the holidays in, you know, 250 square foot house. I mean, the party's got to be in the yard. I mean, it's just, you really have to think about some of this stuff. What do you do with all of your personal belongings? You know, your clothes, your photo albums, your, you know, it doesn't even have to be about, you know, expensive material things, but just, you know, some stuff doesn't even have to cost a lot. You just like it. And so you got to get rid of it in order to have a house that size.
But I guess the government would charge you for air then, since they can't charge you for nothing else.
Don't think you can live off the land for free. It's just ludicrous. And so one thing I noticed, this is part of, and if this is a new term for you, I suggest you go and Google it and definitely learn more about it, Agenda 21. Agenda 21, Wikipedia, you know, they have something on it and a lot of other places on the web too. But, you know, first of all, Agenda 21, one of their main terms that they use is sustainable development, sustainable housing. The term sustainable sounds real cute, but trust me, sustainable means, you know, them conditioning you to believe that what they think is best. So sustainable is a term that you really, when you hear it, you should know that if you hear it in your city council meeting or if you hear it at your school board meeting, they're talking about Agenda 21. And I'll give you an idea of what they said Agenda 21 is. First of all, Agenda 21 is a non-binding, voluntary implemented action plan of the United Nations with regard to sustainable development. It is a product of the UN Conference on Environment and Development held in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. It is an action agenda for the UN. Other multilateral organizations and individual governments around the world that can be executed at local, national, and global levels. And the 21 in Agenda 21 refers to the 21st century. And so do your research and understand when you see things like smart meters, bike trails, little houses, like 250 square feet houses, they are conditioning you to think that you need to reduce your carbon footprint.
But you left them out. You left them out. Huh? Those little bitty electric cars that they have that you can get somewhere, and there's another place where you can drive it wherever and park it. And it's like you don't have any transportation. You just use a credit card swipe, drive that car to another location, leave it there, and you like the bikes. So like the same thing with the bikes, but they have them in Austin, and they have them in Houston, they have them in some other places. But definitely in Austin. In San Antonio.
In San Antonio, too?
Yeah.
Let me give you all an idea. What Agenda 21 was a 300-page document, and you can probably find it on the web if you search for it hard enough. But this was the world leaders coming together from all across the world in Rio de Janeiro in 1992, to come up with how they think we ought to live, breathe, eat, everything. And one of the things that are coming with this sustainable development is, let me tell you how they broke it down. They broke it down into four sections. Section one was social and economic dimensions, changing, and that basically deals with changing consumption patterns. Hello, smart meters, sustainable housing. You know, eventually when you see all these bike trails, they're going to get you out of your SUVs and put you on bicycles because gas prices are going to go so high. So that's just section one. Section two deals with conservation and management of resources for development. An example of that is they're trying to figure out a way to control pollution and radioactive wastes. Well, you think about on your, your car inspection each year, they're dealing with the emissions tests, where they're watching to see how much pollution your car, the bus, and everybody else is putting into the air. Section three deals with strengthening the role of major groups, dealing with like children, women, local authorities, and businesses. Section four deals with means and implementation. That's dealing with science, education, and technology transfer. So these people basically sat down mean, seriously. And thought they knew what was best for all the rest of us. So they decided to tell us that we needed less, we could live off less. And they still have their big cars and big houses, but we, the little 99%, don't need all that. And AJ, I'm just here to tell you, I'm just anti-Agenda 21. That's just the way
but
it Carrie, is.
Okay, this is just like I got you, like you, they got caught. You know, it was this presentation of them meeting. But there's always been meetings and agendas written and things that we don't even know that they put in place that are for us. This is just one that you can read.
Yeah. And you know, and the thing is, you're right. And until recently, there wasn't a camera everywhere, and there wasn't a whistleblower everywhere to come and come back and tell the masses what's going on. And I'm sure they didn't want us to find out that they were meeting about, you know, how much air we can breathe and how much water we can consume. See, y'all, these smart meters that they put on your house. Those smart meters basically tell them when you turn the light on, when you turn the washing machine on, you know, how much utilities you're using, and eventually they will tell us when they feel we should be using these utilities. And when we don't use them as they want us to, they can shut us off from the office downtown. So they don't have to come out anymore and tell you that we're going to cut your utilities off. They just cut you off from downtown now. And so all of this is control. I mean, it is massive control, and we are so in trouble. Let's just put it that we are so in trouble. As they say, we are screwed. So, but, you know, God is ultimately in control, you know, so I really don't want it. To make it seem like there's no out, because God is always in control. But that's just, you know, one of the things that caught me out when I saw the stackable housing, and every couple of weeks somebody's posting something on Facebook about it, AJ. I just thought, they're really trying to condition us to think that we don't need so much space, you know.
Well, the thing is, I think a lot of times things are posted in different areas just to gauge the response. Because, you know, I think the first time I noticed this was, you know, because I remember when Nixon was going to retire, you know, when Gil Scott Harris song, when Nixon was going to retire, he said, okay, I'm going to resign, you know, when they was trying to impeach him. He said, I'm resigning. Just give me $450,000 a year, and I resign. Okay. And then America was shocked to my $450,000. What you mean $450,000? Then he said, okay, $250,000. I said, well, okay, for sure, you know. But it was like we always go through the shock phase because somebody asks for too much or tell us they're going to take too much. And then we don't expect them to take anything, but when they say they're going to take too much, we're willing to give up something. So it's the act of them saying that this is going to happen, but no, it don't happen. We just give up more than we had planned because we hadn't planned on giving up anything before that. But now we're going to give up something because we don't want it to be that extreme.
You could definitely be right. I mean, because, you know, the thing is, when they first, and I don't know if anybody's been paying attention, but when they first started putting bike trails down, I thought, you know, I'm a little too old to start, you know, biking to work. And not that it's not a healthy thing, don't get me wrong, but first of all, I don't want to be sweaty, you know, when I get to work. So I'm thinking, what's the bike trails for? And then I start seeing them popping up all over the city. And that's when, shortly thereafter, I found out about Agenda 21. Agenda 21 is about, and this is just another, I'm just going to throw this out there and I'm going to move on. Agenda 21 basically has in its implementation that they will eventually have bumper zones around the U.S., and I don't know if that's because missiles won't be able to hit us, you know, so far in. I don't know. But there's going to be bumper zones. And if you notice, lately, there's a lot of little ghost towns. Some kind of way towns just seem to just dry up. And then when they start to dry up, the city services move away. And then eventually the people move away. And then the towns become ghost towns. Or as in the case of that town in California, we did a show on them, where they had two dams running along their town. And what the government did was say, we're gonna bust up the dams. And the people said, well, please don't bust up the dams, because a lot of us make our living you know, off these dams. But the government came up with all kind of flimsy excuses, but ultimately they were winning the argument, and it was nothing that the people were going to be able to do. And one guy came on the show, and he says, I have a $1 million property that I can't sell for $200,000 because, you know, I have cattle and all this on my land, and once you take the dam away, it's not going to be as valuable. And so that, long story short, one way or another, if they want you to move, they're going to get you to move. So all of these things that they have planned and put in place, like, you know, the bike trails and, you know, moving you out of certain areas, they want to centralize you in certain areas, and they want to depopulate other areas. And if you're not a part of the program, they will put enough pressure on you eventually that you will be. Because when they take all of the resources out, like, no more post office, no more police department, no more fire department. You know, most people will know it's better to move somewhere else than be here where there's no jobs, there's no fire department, there's no police department. And people typically just eventually move to another area. So that's one thing I know about Agenda 21. But I suggest to everyone, learn what Agenda 21 is so you'll recognize it. So when you're sitting in your city council meetings or your school board meetings or, you know, whatever meetings that your city or government may be holding, at least you'll understand when they start saying the term sustainable that they're talking about a way to implement Agenda 21 in your area, and more than likely it's not going to be a good thing. But anyway, moving on. Listen, if you just tuned in, you've come center stage tonight. We're just slowing it down tonight and talking about the headlines and the news articles that we've seen in the last couple of weeks that just jumped out at us. And those are the ones we're talking about tonight. We're going to talk about the spinach recall and the beef recall and the conflict that's going on with the Ukraine and Russia. We're going to talk about whether or not we're headed to World War III on that one. We want to talk about Marissa Alexander. That's the Florida lady that shot a warning shot because she said her and her husband were having some type of altercation. She feared for her life. Went to the garage, got a gun, shot a warning shot, and got 20 years. Anyway, back this September, I believe, they overturned that conviction, and now she's facing a new trial where now the prosecuting attorney is saying that she may be facing 60 years. So for just firing a warning shot. So Florida, again, with that stand your ground and self-defense law, is just all screwed up. Also, we're going to talk about Oversight Committee Chairman Daryl Issa and how he turned the mic off on Ranking Member Elijah Cummings this week when they were in the hearing about the IRS. Ms. Lerner was testifying, and you know, Mr. Issa felt like her invoking the Fifth was just not getting anywhere, so he decided to conclude the meeting, and Representative Cummings was still, you know, trying to continue the process, and the chairman basically just cut his mic off as though what he was saying was not even important. So we're going to talk about that. We're talking about whether or not there's a gay agenda in the land, and we just got through covering sustainable housing and how it seems to be a push for people to go from 2,500 square feet to 250 square feet. So those are some of the things we're talking about tonight. If you'd like to chime in on tonight's topic, call us up at 347-850-8390 and then press 1. So those are the topics you're talking about. But, AJ, you know, one thing I had a problem with is the spinach recall. You know, I have just gotten on the spinach kick. I mean, I really have. I've been trying to do the right thing. And every time you turn around, it looks like almost every 6 months, there's a spinach recall. And I am just,
No, I'm just laughing because I remember they recalled it before.
What is going on? I mean, you know, I'm trying to figure out, first of all, how does E. coli get on the spinach? Is it through the workers not washing hands? Is what?
That's the pesticide they use, the pesticide.
But how can the pesticides have E. coli on it?
I don't know, because I remember they recalled spinach, they recalled something else. It was, I'm trying to think of what it was, because I know, what was it? It was called spinach. It wasn't lettuce. It was something else that you use on hamburgers. I'm trying to think of what it is, though.
It probably was lettuce.
It was like 5 years ago. like 5 years ago, they recalled it.
Well,
and it has to be something. Has to be something in the fertilizer or something in the pesticide. I'm not sure.
Well, my theory
could
the theory be that, you know, you're out there in the open and there's not bathrooms out there? Is it maybe the workers are going to the bathrooms and not having a place to wash their hands, and then they're coming back and touching the spinach? Is that possibly what's going on?
No, I doubt that. That's been, you got to think, you know, back in slave times, they was doing the spinach, cabbage, cotton, you know, cotton and everything. Cotton and tobacco were bigger markets. But they've always had people in fields picking whatever fruit and whatever places without. Were there porta potties?
This is true. Oh, you're right. Porta potties been around, what, last 30 years? I mean, so you're probably right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just can't see how we keep messing this thing up because, you know, basically, and first of all, if you did eat some of that spinach, we're talking about that Taylor Farms Retail Inc. Is the one that's recalling a select group of their organic baby spinach products over concern that you know it may have E. coli in it. And basically, you know, if you got it, you gonna know it because they say some of the symptoms of it is that you have abdominal cramps and diarrhea, and in some cases it progresses to bloody diarrhea, so and fever and vomiting. So if you got it, you're gonna know it. But you know, the thing is, this is supposed to be the very expensive spinach because it's organic. And we know anytime you say organic connected to food, you're talking about a higher price. And we're talking about the Central Market organic baby spinach, Full Circle Market Site, Simple Truth, and Taylor Farms. All of these obviously are basically the same group of spinach. And it's just, to me, the recalls are just starting to get unnerving because by the time you find out, it's too late. You know, somebody's dead or somebody.
You said it's like Toyota, huh?
Yeah, you know, so they're going to let you die before they tell you something wrong with it. And so it's just unnerving to me.
But
you know,
that was my thing. But Toyota knew long before they had problems with the gas tank and problems with, you know, the gas pillar, whatever other problem they had with the car. But the thing is once you sell too many cars, to recall, you know, a couple of 100,000 or a million cars is nothing because, you know, you got your own service centers. So it's
true.
Not charging you for labor, but you've already made money off the car. So you're good.
You know,
just like,
and you got a point. You know, the thing is, it's no accountability today. I mean, we're going to talk about the beef recall, which is even worse than the spinach recall. And you know, I had to think. I was like, wasn't it just a little while ago that they were talking about some budget cuts with the inspectors? And then I went back and found an article.
They already cut inspectors. They've cut divisions of inspectors, so they don't have enough people to go through all these places.
And that's what, I went back and found the article. And I was like, I heard something about that. It looks like in February 2013, the Huffington Post did an article, and basically in the article it said that impending across the board budget cuts could mean basically fewer government food safety inspectors and higher prices at the, you know, at the counter. And I thought to myself, well, dang, we can't win. I mean, so, you know, and that was in 2013, and so I thought, wow. And so then when I heard about the beef recall, y'all, which is worse than the spinach recall, I just wanted to say, like Dick Gregory had said at one point, can't we just live off water? I had to start to agree with him. Do you know that they recall some 8.7 million pounds of meat? 8.7 million?
Remember the chickens they had to recall. And then they found out McDonald's was grinding the whole chicken's bones and everything, beef, you know. Feet, chicken knees, everything to make these nuggets. And then they say they're not doing it no more.
That's just gross. Wait a minute. I'm sorry, the beak, the what? Everything.
Yeah, they was grinding chicken up because they showed the process. It was looked like a pink little slime that they were making grinding the chicken up. And that's what they were making the nuggets out of.
And they put a little filler in there too, some type of filler too, didn't they?
Yeah, and once it was discovered, they said, okay, we're not doing it no more. you know, just like all these stories, just I'm just saying this because that's the accountability factor, because now nobody wants to be accountable, just like with the oil spill in the Gulf. You know,
yeah.
everything was horrible till they started cutting all these people checks, and everybody became complacent, like, how do I get a check? I'm not going to sit down and talk about it. So then they came on here talking about, you know, because even that instance, they were just like the movie with Steven Seagal in it. It was like they just wrote his speech, and the CEO of that company did the speech that Steven Seagal did on the other movie. You know, I'm like, it was just that blatant. I'm saying it's like we are robots. It's like we're not paying attention to anything around us anymore because we're playing Bejeweled and...
But they dumbed us down with the fluoride. Well, no, they ain't dumbed us all down, but they dumbed someone's down with the fluoride in the water, y'all, and this the stupid TV that we're listening to. I mean, because to be honest with you, this really angered me. They said that basically some 8.7 million pounds of meat from a Northern California company had to be recalled because it was from diseased and unsound animals that weren't properly inspected. Now, if they had said a small amount, I say okay. But when you say 8.7 million, that almost sounds like somebody got paid off. I mean,
But how many small animals does it take?
You laugh. It's not funny. No,
I'm saying it is funny. They say disease and small animals. I'm saying, you said about 8 million pounds. How many small animals would it take to... That's a whole lot of small animals, ain't it?
Well, this is beef, so you mean a whole lot of big animals.
No, that's it.
I mean, so can you imagine...
They said what contaminated it.
Okay, no. They said it was disease, so there's no telling. You know, they ain't even going there. But you can just imagine, I mean, you know, a cow is a big animal, y'all. So if you can just imagine a cow looking sick, you know, he kind of wobbling, he's not, you know. I mean, I don't know I don't know. You know, I'm assuming these are like cows with mad cow disease or whatever. But whoever the professional rancher was that had all these cattle, they had to know.
But Gary, when you look at the cows and the chicken market, you know, now they're talking about farm fresh chickens and they're not this way. Because I think it was like about 5 or 6 years ago, they had all these cows that they were taking to the market, getting ready to get hit in the head with the little hammer or whatever they hit them in the head with.
Yeah.
And some of the cows were sickly, and the only thing that was keeping them up is there were so many cows being fed through this little chute that cow was just kind of traveling with them. So if you don't have any inspectors and FDA and all these other people to inspect these farms and inspect these meat markets, and who's putting a stamp on them?
Mm.
All of them have FDA stamp, right? Do you have your own stamp now that you stamp your own meat?
Mm. And, you know, and I would not be surprised. I mean, because I think there's big business in it, first of all, and I don't know what the inspectors – you know, are paid, but I'm sure there's a bad inspector just like there's a bad person in every profession. And I just wonder if somebody was turning their heads on this because 8.7 million pounds of meat is a lot of meat. That's a lot of meat. And this was by the Rancho. Basically, they said the recall was affecting Rancho Feeding Corporation products, basically, as detailed by the USDA's Food and Safety Inspection Services. And basically, they thought initially – that it was only about 40,000 pounds of meat. Imagine that. But then they had to expand it and say the recall included 8.7 million pounds. You know, so I don't know. I just lost a little faith in, you know, meat at the supermarket after I saw that. Because, you know, I and I'm going to call the name of the store because it is what it is. There's a Menards that we frequented, and it was twice we had to take back the meat because it had the food coloring, like it looked like it was good meat, but when you open the package, it smelled. And I said, you know, I'm not going to pay $8, $9 for meat, and it smells. And when we took it back to the store, the manager didn't ask any questions, just immediately took it and said, you know, just go back and get another package. And we did that 2 times, but after that I began to think, well, you know what? Wait a minute. Why isn't he concerned that something's wrong with the meat. You know what I mean? And so I decided to no longer buy meat from that Menards because I began to wonder if there's something going on in the meat room. You know, are they coloring the meat, or is the meat coming in bad, or what? So I just didn't get any more meat from there. But I wonder how often that had happened because, you know, you would think that he would have a problem with you bringing it back and ask questions, but he didn't ask any questions, which left me wondering.
Have you ever noticed in the meat section, especially beef and steaks, and that it has a bleach smell?
Is that what you call it, a bleach smell?
Yeah, I smell like bleach, and I don't know why you'd have to put, you know, any type of anything on some meat to make it smell like something like it's not meat.
You mean, are you saying the smell of the area where the meat is at, or you mean the meat itself?
Like the packaging.
Oh, no, I hadn't noticed that. What's weird? Huh, go ahead.
No, I've seen it a couple times because, you know, you pick up meat and you're looking at it because, you know, you try and get, you know, you buy the lean, but the lean don't look as any different than the other one in the package. So I'm like, I just want to look at it and see what it looked like. And I'm like, why does it smell like bleach?
Because
I don't know, maybe it's just a subconscious thing, but I look at all the meat and I check all the meat and I feel it, try to look at, see what it feel like when I open up the chickens and the chicken parts. I look at them, make sure they're not gold and yellow already, like they've already been broiled.
Stop, AJ. And you know, and the thing is, you have to follow your gut too on some of this stuff, because years ago I used to be like a wing person. That's the only part of the chicken that I cared about. But I noticed that whenever I took the chicken, the wings out of the package, I would just get the wings, nothing else. And when I would take the wings out of the package, when I put the container in the garbage, if the garbage was there the next day, I would notice that the packaging smelled like fish as opposed to chicken. And I thought, that's strange. And I noticed that for a period of time. Didn't even ring a bell as to why that was. And then later is when I found out that when they inject the chickens with the hormones, the wing is where they're putting it at. So that's probably it. Now, if I get a package of chicken thighs, when I take the chicken thighs out of the package, if the package is still in the garbage the next day, I don't smell it. But the chicken wings, I did. So there's just no telling what they're doing to us. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just no telling. You know, but we got to start paying attention to more things and following our gut, because I remember thinking that. I remember thinking, why is that the case? Why is it? And it wasn't just one time or two times or three times. And I just really got used to it instead of questioning, well, why would chicken smell like fish? But now I realize it's probably because that's the point of entry for where they were doing it at. And this is the part that bothered me about, too. They said the products, talking about this meat, the products are adulterated because they are unsound, unwholesome, or otherwise are unfit for human food and must be removed from commerce.
The question is, how long had that company, that place, or those packages, or that meat company been selling meat that was already bad before they made enough money to recall the so many millions of pounds of beef?
Well, you know what? Funny you ask. They say from January 2013, from January 1st, 2013, to January 7th, 2014. Now, how many people,
okay,
how many people, you know, got sick from that?
But that's
okay.
What I'm saying. See, the thing is, you know, I think in America what we have now, we have this acceptability clause, you know, like the acceptable loss for Toyota was 5-6 lives. Then they recall all the cars, and then they say they got all these safety features and they best car available. I'm like, you kill some people, you got to be the best car. Then you have, you know, McDonald's, they, you know, say we're changing the process, all they've done it all this time. So everybody really don't have to change anything. They just have to say that they're changing it because there's no inspector, nobody governing, or nobody looking over their shoulders to see if they actually changed it.
Yeah, that's true. And you know what? Even like if you think about recalls on cars, they know they sold you that car, but nobody comes
exactly
looking for you when they know something's defective about it. If you're somebody who and thank God I'm not this way, if you don't take your car to the dealer to be fixed, then more than likely your recall is not going to be caught on you unless you happen to hear it on the news or see it on the internet. And so think about all the cars that are out there that have recalls on them for different items, and they never get caught because the people can't afford to take the car to the dealer, and they take it to some other place because it's less expensive, and they're driving around with these defective parts on their cars. I mean, it happens all the time. So, again, no accountability.
But,
period.
You know, that's the same thing with meat, and, you know, cause if you remember some of the first time they recall spinach and some other things, there was some in the cans, too, and they say if the can number was this series of numbers. And a lot of people probably didn't even look at the cans, didn't even look at the numbers, didn't even look at the type of spinach that they bought, and didn't notice. So they already have this percentage that's going to be sent back, percentage that we will accept this loss, and it can write it off as a loss as far as monetarily, even though they sold the product and the store is giving, you know. So everything's acceptable losses, and it's acceptable percentage of people that's going to be sick, just like the flu, you know. But when they get a flu shot, they say the flu shot is, the last flu shot they were given said didn't even do anything for the new flu that was out.
Yeah.
But they were still trying to get everybody to come get the flu shots, although the hospitals were filled with people with the flu.
You know what? It's kind of like how I think of Hollywood now. None of it is real. You know what I'm saying? It's like what they tell us, it's all half-truths. And they only tell us when they're caught or they think they're about to be caught, you know. And so everything is just like a mirage. If you really look at it, the world that we live in now, you know, it's just a bunch of liars and crooks and gangsters and seriously. And they dress themselves up in suits and call themselves entrepreneurs and politicians. And they just tell us whatever they want us to know. You know what I mean? And the rest, you know, we find out if we find out. If we don't, you know, they just continue this. I don't know. It's almost scary where we're at now because, you know, back in the day, to kill someone was a really bad thing. But today, they're killing us in so many different ways. And killing somebody doesn't seem to be a bad thing to certain people today. It almost seems like, well, it's a necessary evil. We need to get rid of 5 billion people anyway. You know, when I hear people say the world is overpopulated, I'm thinking to myself, well, won't you kill yourself? You know, I mean, that's just crazy to me. How are you going to say the world is overpopulated? So how do we decide who's going to lay there?
But Carrie, if you remember Richard Pryor, Richard Pryor had the joke that was one of the best jokes he ever put out there. He was talking about how many people was in the world where he had no place to ride his horse.
What did he say?
I said Richard Pryor had one of the jokes back in the day about the world being overpopulated, talking about how many people was around, and he had no place to ride his horsey.
Same.
You know, and it was funny. But I'm saying what happens is most of the things that we laugh about eventually become something that you see.
Oh, yeah.
It's like
they were
desensitizing you to accept this thing coming because we want you to laugh at it first.
Well. You know what? Ain't nobody laughing now. Seriously. I mean, you know what? This beef recall has made me want to go vegetarian. Ain't nobody laughing now. And you know what? Do you know what they said about this? They said that the recall notice indicates a reasonable probability that consumption could result in serious adverse health consequences. Now, what does that mean, Death? I mean, heart attack, stroke, what? You know, so, I mean, everything is very broad. So in this recall, they didn't tell you what to look for, basically. I mean, they gave you some code numbers, but if you consume that in January of 2013, you think you still got that meat? Do you think you still know what the recall number on that was?
No.
You know.
But see, the thing is, the people that went to the doctor for whatever they thought was something different still don't think it was the meat.
Exactly. Didn't even think twice about the meat. Yeah, that one just really bothered me. I mean, it's just, you know, basically they said a wide range of products are listed in the recall, including beef carcasses of various parts such as the heads, the cheeks, the lips, the liver, the feet, and the tongue in boxes of 20 pounds and bigger, 40-pound boxes of veal bones, and 60-pound boxes of veal times are included as well. So, you know, does that mean they sold it to restaurants when you're talking about 40 pounds?
Well, Terry, that means that the people that ate it, it was marinated so good, they didn't know.
It was top, AJ. It was seasoned so well, they didn't know they were dying from it. I mean, it's just crazy. And I'm just frustrated because, you know, they included the state I live in with this recall. I mean, so, you know, I don't know. They said California, Florida, Illinois, Texas. Hmm?
But Terry, you got to know, if it's beef, steaks, veal, it, you know, chicken, Texas is in there because Texas had barbecue. They finna fry. They finna cook everything.
Yeah.
You know, because a friend of mine that came from New York, he said every fine cuisine restaurant he saw in Texas was either a steak restaurant or something. He said, so why is steak the only fine cuisine in Texas?
It's big business here. There's a steak house put in
it. I never thought about it. I started looking around, and that's the truth.
Yeah.
You got seafood, Mexican restaurants, Italian restaurants, you know, fish and barbecue.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everything else is steaks and.
And steakhouses.
Yeah, that's why I say everything else is steaks.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I suggest some of them restaurants go back and check because, you know, when the people come back and say they got sick off of something, it's probably some of this beef that was in this recall. So basically, y'all, you know, if you think that you could have possibly been affected, file your lawsuit against Rancho Feeding, you know. let me stop. Oh, what? That was bad. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that, but I mean, you know, it probably did affect somebody we know. I'm just saying because they're making out like a fat rat because they weren't specific in anything in naming name brands or anything, and so more than likely somebody we know is affected by something in this recall. And the problem is the side effects may not even pop up, you know, immediately. You know, AJ, you know what I mean? Sometimes you get sick by.
I'm thinking, Terry, it's been so cold and everything lately that. When people got sick, they was thinking it was a stomach flu or stomach virus or something that had nothing to do with what they ate.
And you are so right. I mean, you know, you so right. I mean, it could be many things. And you know, one thing I'm trying to do is train myself. And y'all, I'm gonna tell y'all so y'all do this as well. Follow your gut, these days. If I could tell y'all how many times my gut has saved me lately. Your gut tells you when something's not right, but we just, I don't know, logic confuses you. And a lady who's now deceased who taught me so many things told me once that your gut is your first instinct. And what happens is because over the course of our lifetime, logic, we've learned logic. Your gut is instinctive. So your gut responds immediately to any situation, but logic, things that we've learned, confuses us. So your logic, my gut may tell me AJ's a bad guy. My logic says AJ's good looking, he's nice, he's a great poet, oh my God, he's so funny. But my gut instinctively told me he was a bad guy. So if I follow my gut down the road, it'll prove out AJ's a bad guy. But logic will probably make me accept him because I'm looking at all the superficial stuff. So,
Terry, that is really not a good example, I'm just saying.
I thought about that halfway in, and I thought, well, but anyway, y'all know where I'm going with that.
Too late now.
AJ's a good guy, y'all, for real. But no, that's something she told me. And so even down to the food you eat. I'm just playing, AJ. You know I'm just playing with you, but that's just really how I look at it. And I gauge stuff by that. You would be surprised. It will make you walk away from food. It will make you walk away from people. It will make you walk away from situations or deals when you can't even understand why your gut says no. but it just does. And so down to the food you eat. If y'all look at some food and it just don't look right, walk away. Because there's no telling. It may be part of this be-free call. But anyway, moving on. Listen, if you just tuned in, you come Center Stage tonight. We're talking about just news headlines from across the country and across the world because there's so much going on. And every now and then here on Center Stage, we just like to catch up on the news because we only come on once a week. And there's just no way that we can cover all the news stories. Just doing one show a week. So sometimes we like to just slow it down and just chime in on what we've seen in the news that caught our attention. And so we're talking about the spinach recall, the beef recall, the conflict in the Ukraine, Marissa Alexander. We're talking about what happened at the Oversight Committee hearing the other day. We want to talk about that now. I think I want to go there next, AJ.
Let's talk about the disrespect that they have for a whole lot of our public officials.
Well, we can go there. You know what? Even up to the president, huh?
That's what I'm saying. It's blatant. Yeah.
And I don't know. What I saw, and the YouTube video is on – the video is on YouTube, if you all are not aware of what I'm talking about. But Oversight Committee Chairman Daryl Issa basically turned the mic off on Ranking Member Elijah Cummings this week in a hearing that they were having with one of the officials from the IRS. Ms. Lerner was testifying, and she kept invoking the Fifth Amendment. And so – the chairman got so upset, he basically said, hey, let's just conclude this. This is the gist of what he said, y'all. He just basically said, we can just conclude this. We're not getting anywhere. She's not, doing anything but invoking the Fifth. So just conclude it. He was just so frustrated with her. Well, Representative Cummings, Elijah Cummings, he still was trying to ask questions. And basically the chairman – looked at him as though, didn't I say the meeting's over? And he turned the man's mic off. I mean, cameras are everywhere. People are everywhere. And he basically walked out of the meeting with this man still talking. And a lot of people found that very disrespectful. Chairman Issa is Caucasian. Representative Elijah Cummings is African-American. You don't know. And so... what did you think of that, AJ? Did you find that like, wow, what the heck is what?
I actually consider it par for the course, part of this golf term that is just it should be average. And I consider that because I've been posting on my page for it's definitely all last week because last week I was trying to get everybody to go early vote because if you early vote you don't have to go to your specific polling place to vote. And people click on stuff on my page, and I was to my early vote and put the Emancipation Proclamation down and went to this council meeting where we had all these city councilmen and all these people talking. And I was listening to all the rhetoric the Republican was saying is the same thing that you see nationally on TV. It's like they go to a meeting, and this is what they're supposed to say. Because they were talking about, don't vote for this person because they are in the pocket of this Obama, and we don't want they're in the pocket of Obama, and we're trying to kill Obamacare still, ain't it? And I think one thing they were saying, they say they're not accepting the additional funds in Texas for Medicare, which helps the people on Medicare pay for the health care. And Texas has, Fort Worth, Dallas has the highest rate of of babies born with defects, highest rate of minorities with minorities, that is. Highest rate of problems with pregnancies and all this other stuff because people don't have insurance. And Dallas Fort Worth has the most people, minorities that don't have insurance.
But
and I'm like, how do you take that from these people running for office that know they have to know the statistics, but they don't care? What was that?
The whole thing about the black and white card that keeps being played And y'all, we're in the middle of this game. I mean, seriously. And like him or love him, he's our president. You know, I mean, and so it seems like there's such a backlash, you know, since we've had him as our president that, you know, it seems like certain Caucasian people just, I don't know, they're, it's like little kids acting out. And I just really think it's a sad commentary when someone will cut someone's mic off. And he looked at him with this look as though
he was of no consequence.
It was with this look like, N-word, didn't you see I concluded the meeting and you still talking? He looked over at him like, are you still talking? I mean, it was as though he didn't even consider him a whole man, you know?
But Carrie, but see, I'm with you on that. See what I think what's happening in America right now can be summed up pretty easily. Let's say America is this corporation with a black CEO.
Mm-hmm.
But the black CEO doesn't do all the hiring and the firing, and he don't do all the things. So any minorities come to work for this corporation and say, hey, man, you know, we don't need a quota anymore. We got a black CEO.
Well, see, technically, that ain't a fantasy because America is a corporation,
yeah,
and we do have a black CEO.
But that's what I'm saying. See now that we have, a black commander-in-chief, African-American commander-in-chief, it's like, nothing else matters. Everything else is free game. There's no more prejudice. You know, we can skip down the street holding hands and, you know, every little black boy and every little white girl can go to school together and, you know, like the Martin speech. But they so blatantly talk about him, they don't even give him the reverence of their president.
I agree.
I'm saying, because if you look at Hannity or any of the other shows, Hannity or some other show, they say, after doing his first term, he said that his whole show for 4 years was about, we just want this to be a one-termer. That was his whole show. His whole show, every show he was saying that, just going to be a one-termer. And I was like, how can people be that mad for so long? You're going to be mad for 8 years?
And you know what? And I listen to a talk show host almost on a daily basis. And, you know, he has such a great show, and I won't call his name, but he has such a great show and such good information. But, you know, he totally disrespects our president, I mean, across the board. And some of the things that he says, I'm thinking, your show would be so much better. I mean, a good 50% better if you would just drop that. You know, and the thing is, George Bush was our president for 8 years, and listen, to be honest with you, I think he's one of the funniest guys. I mean, I've never seen anybody go through or some of the things that the country was going through. He always kept a smile, always kept a sense of humor. So as a person, I like George Bush. I didn't like his politics, but I respected the office because he was the commander-in-chief, and that's what you do when you understand that we're supposed to respect the office if you don't respect the man. And I think that's what seems to be lacking with our president now. They don't seem to understand that you respect the office even if you don't respect the man. And so
but I've heard everybody say that, Carrie, and people still don't, they don't even like you telling them that.
Because
I hear people talking about President Obama Obama need to be impeached. They need to get rid of him. They need to do this, you know, just like, yeah, Republicans wearing shirts with targets on them, like they were saying, you know. And I'm like, that is just so blatant. You know, you even saw people at different, even recently, you know, at some campaign speeches where they were talking about, you know, Obama did this and Obama did that, and he's still this, you know, Kenyan. He's still all these bad things, all these horrible things, and they just go on through with it and keep talking. I'm like, can we get past some of that?
But see, you know what I think? I think so much of what's going on in this country, period, is what we've allowed to happen. And I think we're so comfortable in our cars and our homes and whatever, you know, things we've acquired that we just are not willing to risk change. You know what I'm saying? We're not willing to say, you know what, we're tired like they were, you know, back in the 60s and willing to give up something to get something. And I think what's happening is we're losing ground so fast while everybody is sitting in their homes playing it safe. And I think by the time people wake up and realize, oh, my God, we're in trouble, and this at my door, it's going to be too late. Because I think everybody is looking at it today like, it's not my problem. You know, I'm not getting involved because, you know, I'm just worried about me and my four no more. And I think that's a sad commentary today because, you know, Dr. King was so right when he said an injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. I so agree with that because what I see is just – every day we're just losing a right here and a right there and a little disrespect over here and a little disrespect over there. And what happens when this is going on is the tension is rising, you know, and so it's a matter of time before the power keg is ignited. I mean, and I just see that's where we're going. It's just too much tension, and it's not being resolved. And I think we're just playing it too safe. You know, if it's not us, then we're not concerned. You know, and we've seen our president be disrespected. We saw, you know, Representative Cummins the other day be disrespected, and yet nobody's saying anything because it's not us, you know. So that was just one of the things that I saw.
I think part of the problem is that we thought we were at a place to where we made it. So people weren't voting, you know. The politicians, they get out there and say all these horrible things and make all these comments. Nobody's holding them accountable. They're actually winning the next time they run, too, as though we're not voting. We don't care what they say. We'll get out here and say that we care. But nobody will actually go and say, hey, this person said this, so we ain't voting for this person. We need everybody. And I'm saying nobody's accountable for anything because we're not making people be accountable. We're not holding them accountable.
You know, I wish I knew what the answer was. And, you know, one of the answers that I did see this week is Jamal Bryant, he's a Baltimore preacher, is going to join the rally. We're going to talk about Marissa Alexander now. He's going to be one of the leaders spearheading the rally for Stand Your Ground in Tallahassee this upcoming Monday. Y'all, we got to get out the pulpit. I mean, we got all these preachers in their fine suits and driving these Rolls Royces, but they ain't helping the people. We got to get them out in the street. I mean, because for whatever reason, people seem to look up to their preachers, and I think the preachers have got to have a bigger role. I mean, they've, for a long time, basically since the 60s, played it real safe. But I think Jamal Bryant is definitely pioneering to come out of the pulpit, take off his suit for a while and put on his jeans and tennis shoes on Monday and go down to Tallahassee and say, enough with Stand Your Ground. And I think anybody who's in the Tallahassee area, they need to get there and be part of that rally that's starting at the convention center at 9:30 about Stand Your Ground, because we're looking at Trayvon Martin, we're looking at Jordan Davis, you know, Michael Giles, Marissa Alexander. Stand Your Ground just ain't working. You know, and Marissa Alexander is a prime example. You know, her and her husband had a history of domestic violence. I think both of them, it kind of went back and forth for whatever reason. But that particular day, she says, she alleges that, you know, she felt in fear of her life, but she only fired a warning shot. She didn't shoot him. She didn't kill him. But she fired a warning shot, and she initially got 20 years. And back in September of 2013, last year, they overturned it. For whatever reason, her original trial was overturned on the grounds that court placed an undue burden of proof on Alexander, who was acting in self-defense. So due to that, they overturned the original trial. And that now has forced her into a second trial. And this crazy district attorney, Angela Corey, is now saying, hey, if you go for a second trial, you may now face 60 years for a warning shot. Y'all, that's just crazy. AJ, I can't even make sense of that. I mean, does that make sense?
But you know, we just had shows on a guy being convicted of attempted murder, but they couldn't get him on murder. Somebody.
Michael Dunn.
We had another guy to go that wasn't, you know, that was not guilty. Actually, he killed somebody.
Mm-hmm.
This lady is trying to stop from being killed or killing somebody, and they want to lock up for life.
Yep.
It makes absolutely no sense.
And it just is so crazy because this is the same district attorney that tried the Trayvon Martin case. And I'm just, like, trying to understand, how do you tell somebody that, I tell you what, I gave you 20 years the first time. Now you come before me again, I'm going to triple the sentence. I mean, what kind of law? I would, as a district attorney, it's almost as though she's trying to make an example out of the girl. I think the embarrassment.
We can't be the example every time. You know what I'm saying?
True. But, you know, Marissa Alexander got a whole lot of publicity during the Trayvon Martin trial because people began to say, hey, you know, look, here's an example of how Stand Your Ground didn't work, you know, and look what it did to her. You know, got Trayvon Martin killer free, and this particular girl didn't kill anybody, and look at her. You know, they're giving her 20 years, so she got a whole lot of publicity. And I'm wondering if that embarrassed the prosecutor's office, and so therefore this is, I'll get you back. Is that possible?
Oh, it's definitely possible. It's definitely possible because, see, the thing is, as long as it, I'm saying, if you remember, even the Trayvon case,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't a mass media case at first.
Yeah.
Until it started getting out in the media, then once it hits the media, then you have the show tunes people that sing the show tunes go down there and be a part of it.
Mm.
You know, show tunes people weren't a part of it before. It was like once the cameras showed up, they say, "Well, I'm gonna go ahead and do my show tunes and take my little top hat and my cane."
Maybe that's it. I mean, well, the thing is, Stand Your Ground, and for whatever reason, I guess I don't get. Why is such a – and, you know, again, if you're not familiar with Stand Your Ground, basically Stand Your Ground and self-defense in Florida, basically, there are two pillars standing up the same courthouse. I mean, seriously, you know, they kind of go hand in hand. And so George Zimmerman didn't use Stand Your Ground as his defense. However, the jury was given instructions from Stand Your Ground. So they kind of go hand in hand. And that said, you know, this whole thing with Stand Your Ground is in most states. And so if it's not called Stand Your Ground in your state, it may be called the Castle Doctrine or the Make My Day Law. But it's in most states. And one state says that you have the duty to retreat, and then the other one said that you don't have a duty to retreat. So it kind of varies from state to state. But I think the problem I have across the board with it is it sounds like a good law because if I'm in my house, I'm minding my own business, and I've had some problems lately, I'll be honest with you. I've had some vandalisms on my personal property, and I've had some vandalism on a property that I spent a lot of time, another property that I spent a lot of time at. And the vandalism is happening to my things. That said, Stand Your Ground is a good law in the sense that I'm not going to be a victim.
For self-defense.
Or huh?
It's a good law for self-defense.
For self-defense,
now just,
exactly.
Now it's just a law to kill black boys.
Exactly. Let's just say it like this. If I'm in my home and someone comes to my house, my property is gated, and you know, for whatever reason, you're tampering with my door, you're tampering with my window, you know, you've invaded my house. I'm not talking, because I'd really rather be tried by 12 than carried by 6. And so.
Terry, my father actually shot somebody in our house, and killed him.
Same.
Some years ago, and the police came and looked at everything, did the evidence, and nothing because of the Castle Doctrine. But I'm saying it was a self defense thing.
And that's where I'm at because you know what? I'm never going to consider myself a victim because this is the thing. I feel like this. I don't bother people, and I don't allow nobody to bother me for the most part. And so Does it bother me that somebody's been coming on my property? You better believe it does. And it's bothered me to the point that I thought about it long and hard, and I thought about it like this. Stand your ground, in my opinion, is a good law in the sense that if you are on your property minding your business.
Yes, if the ground you're standing on is yours. You're standing on your ground, yeah.
And you're standing on your ground. You're minding your own business in the sense that you haven't started an altercation and you know, or anything. You're there. And someone comes and disturbs your peace to the point that they're trying to break in and steal from you or break in and cause you harm or whatever, kill you, whatever.
But I think fraud should be standing in the ground.
Say what? Say what?
Fraud law should be standing in the ground because it don't matter where they are. They're killing black boys in gas stations and, you know, on sidewalks and, you know, it's standing in the ground in fraud law. It's not standing your ground. It's standing in the ground. Like
standing
I'm standing, if they look at you, he looked at me like he had mean eyes.
Okay. And, you know, and the thing is, the problem with the law, it seems to me, is it could be a good law if it was defined more clearly. And I think that's where the whole hiccup is, because it seems like if you're black, it works with you if they kill you. Well, no, it works against you for the killer if they kill you. But then if you use it and you're black, it works against you. That's the crazy part about it. So I think the law, you know, just on the foundation where it was started at, where at the point where you have a right to protect yourself if you're in fear of bodily harm or if you're in fear of death, you know, great bodily harm or death, you have a right to defend yourself. However, I think it gets gray and murky when people like George Zimmerman and Don can go and pursue someone else, you know, and then when they feel like they're not winning either the argument, a verbal altercation, or a physical altercation, which I really, in my opinion, don't believe Zimmerman ever had a physical altercation with Trayvon Martin. I really believe that what happened with that was those marks or what appear to be what do you call those, scars? Those are self-inflicted. That's just my opinion. Bruises, I think they were self-inflicted. But, you know, either way, he got off using standard or self-defense as his defense. And so, I don't know, just Florida, I just think, you know, I think the rally is a good thing. And I think I heard Jamal Bryant talk about it on television the other day, and he was very clear on TV1, listen, we realize we didn't rally before and we didn't sing these kumbayas, but this is just a jump-off point. You know, don't think this is it. We're going to start here, and if we have to hit them in the at the point of economics, we'll do that too. But, you know, this is just a jumping-off point. And I think that's what people needed to hear is that, you know, we ain't just going to have another rally, you know, and just, you know, conclude it right there that he's saying that, you know, it's going to go further. And I think that's what's needed because, you know, unfortunately, people of color, we meet, we have a rally, and then we go home.
Now, people of color, what we do, we are so reactionary. We're late anyway when we start.
Yeah.
Because we always start late. You know, it's after something happens, after everybody knew what's happened, it's been in the news, so now everybody's saying, hey, we want y'all to show up. They say, well, this time I want y'all to show up. They probably had three or four rallies. So the fourth one, we're trying to get more people coming out. They say, oh, yeah, let's go to the fourth, and they got cameras, you know. So everybody goes to the fourth rally, and everybody's out there, and then when they leave, they high-five each other like they've done their part. They don't think about not voting for the person that was the DA or the judge over the trial. They don't think about not voting for them. They don't think about not participating in this. And I can't figure out how can you go and participate in something and not look at, I guess, an alternative to stopping it completely.
I think they need to come together this time and say, this is point, you know, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do everything from A to Z. We're going to start here, and we're going to give them an opportunity to respond. And when they don't respond to that, then we're going to go, you know, we're going to take it to the poll, which I think Angela Corey absolutely needs to be voted out in Florida, out of her office. But I think, too, you know, it goes to the politicians you know, in that area. And I think across the board, even in North Carolina, y'all, because, you know, Florida is the one that's under the spotlight. But I did a show in Florida a couple of years ago, and I got boycotted in Florida, y'all. But anyway, they were so mad at me, in North Carolina. They were so mad at me in, I'm sorry, it was South Carolina. South Carolina. They were so mad at me that they boycotted my show because of a shooting down there. But Charlie Condon was the attorney general down there for a while. And Charlie Condon went on record and said, listen, understand your ground. If you are a law enforcement officer and you go to a scene and someone has been killed and they told you that they shot them or they did whatever to them, stabbed them to death, and they told you they did it because they were standing their ground, I don't even want you to arrest them. I don't want you to take it to court. Consider it done. We've had too many robberies down here, and we're not doing this anymore. So what we're going to do is the stand your ground thing is going to cover all that. So if somebody get killed and the person that killed them lived to say it was because of stand your ground and they was just standing their ground, it's a done deal. And you can hardly find anybody who's going to jail in South Carolina under stand your ground. Just putting that out there. So Florida's under the spotlight, y'all, but it ain't just Florida. And I saw that in South Carolina. Those people, we'll call them those people. And I think it was a bunch of people.
No, that's anything. I'm
yeah. Those people, and I'm going to call them sheet-wearing people. Those sheet-wearing people, they boycotted my show. They were so upset that I had the audacity to do a show about a shooting where, you know, a person who they considered, you know, respectable part of their community had shot someone and killed them under stand your ground. So they were like, listen, you know, you don't know how we do it down here. This is how we roll. Charlie Condon said. And that's all they kept. I got all these emails about, you know, I don't know who you are and who you think you are, but stand your ground is this, that, the other. And you talking about got a quick lesson on stand your ground. They are serious about it in South Carolina. So Florida would be just the tip of the iceberg. But I suggest when Jamal and them leave Florida, they move on down to South Carolina and check the record down there because, you know, they shoot you down. And listen, you ain't got to have taken nothing. You ain't got to be threatening nobody's life, nothing. If you say stand your ground and you killed him, they just did, period. So that's just food for thought. But I'm glad Jamal and Benjamin Crump, Al Sharpton, I think the mother of Trayvon Martin, the mother of Jordan Davis, the mother and father of Michael Giles, they're all going to be down there in that rally, and it's going to start at the convention center at 9:30 on Monday. So that should be very, very interesting to see what comes out of that because stand your ground does need some work, you know. So there you are. Okay. AJ, you know another thing that's been in the news, and I just don't even know where to go with that.
I said, what's that? You said, another thing that's been in the news. You said, Tim, are you asking?
Well, listen, because I'm like, I don't know if I ought to pray or what I need to be doing. Because this Ukraine and Russia conflict, to me, is teetering or could be teetering on World War III. That's just me. But I can see that if the U.S. gets involved and they're sending $1 billion in aid to the Ukrainians and Russia's basically, from what I understand, taken over Crimea, basically, which they say is a small part of Ukraine, basically, basically the United States is saying, hey, you can't do that. You can't take over anything. Where does that put us? I mean, are we going to war?
Well, I'm saying, whatever.
Are we going?
No. I thought somebody else was saying something. I'm saying it's like the problem we had with Syria, the problem. I'm saying if you look at the last 3 years with Greece, Syria, all the other countries, there's been so many uprisings because everybody's tired of the the way they've been run, the people not having any say so about anything, and then when they say anything, they had the police out there actually shooting people and killing people. We don't want y'all out here. So, you know, and America did it before. But see, America is the main country that say, hey, look, you gotta have these peaceful and gotta have these peaceful attempts and let the people say what they wanna say. And America is trying to stop the people saying what they want to say over here. So I say we need to get our house straight first.
Yeah.
Or we start working on somebody else's house.
But, you know, the problem is, you know, and I was just thinking about this yesterday as I was preparing for the show. It's like, okay, we have been cutting back militarily, have we not? And we've been getting rid of, we've been purging a lot of high-ranking officials with our sensitive weaponry, right? You know, they're over the areas of our sensitive weaponry, like our, you know, missiles and stuff like that. So, you know, my theory is, are we ready? First of all, you know, I don't think we can afford it. I really don't. I mean, now don't get me wrong. I'm not stupid enough not to know that when we have a war, anytime there's war, somebody's making a whole bunch of money. But it's not trickling down to us. So the man who's making the bullets, the man who's making the guns, the man who's making the uniforms, the man who's making the tents, all those people are making a whole bunch of money. And the people who are both sides of the conflict, they're making a whole bunch of money. The problem is...
Oh, don't talk about Dick Cheney like that.
Say what? I'm just saying. So somebody's going to get rich, but it ain't going to be us. And so what possible interest do we have as the 99% in going to war and getting in the middle of this conflict? It just is not going to help us.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, when it's different countries in Africa, it's not media worthy most of the time until it becomes a YouTube sensation and they start talking about it on the media.
Mm.
But when it's all these other countries, so my thing is, There's about 80 different countries you can go and participate in and, you know, fight for equal rights and fight for human rights for people. And I think everything is worthy of having this conversation. But I think there's a whole lot of equal rights and human rights that, you know, matters that we need to take care of in the United States. Like all these, I'm saying we look at Africa and we talk about $9.99 a day or $9.99 a month or whatever it is to feed children over in Africa, wherever they are, at this point. But we talk about in the community in Fort Worth, we have families that are starving. We have kids that don't have anything to eat. And I'm not talking about that far from where I am. So there are some things that we need to do first before we reach across the seven seas.
I think the problem I have is, you know, there's people who have worked 20, 30 years, and their cities and their counties are going bankrupt, and they're losing their pensions. You know, I saw that in Pritchard, Alabama. You know, the city workers there worked 20 years, some of them 30 years, only to find out one day the check just wasn't in the mail anymore. And so we tell these people that, you know, tough luck. You know, the city's out of money, so therefore you just don't get paid. And some of these people, and these were lovely people. I did a show with them. Lovely people. These people were dependent on handouts and people doing bake sales and, you know, standing at the corner, people taking up donations for them just for them to survive. And so we can't pay them their pensions, but we can go and give $1 billion to a conflict that we don't have anything to do with. To me, that's crazy. I mean, that charity starts at home. You know,
but see, and that's been my argument the whole time. I'm saying because there's countries, you know, in Germany, what I found out after I left Germany, you know, all the military bases in Germany,
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of military bases there in Germany, Italy, that's all over Europe, basically. All the military bases are leased. They don't own any other land. They're leased. So, and then the people that work on them, the nationals that work on the military bases, make a grip. I know in the mess hall, it was back, I'm saying in the 80s, they was making $20-something an hour working in the mess hall.
I don't get it.
So we're paying them for the privilege of keeping our armies there, basically. And plus, you know, so we're paying all these, you know, Israel, I think we give a couple of $1 billion every year. You know, we've been helping Syria out. try to help Greece out. You know, a couple of things go to France. You know, we got a whole lot of people on the list to hand out. Still got people from down here in in West. You know, a little town in Texas where they had
the hurricane or something.
No, the building that blew up.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. In West, we got all these people where I saw people online on TV saying, you know, Texas, number, you send $10 to help people in West. Those people hadn't gotten any of that money, and nobody's, you know, the insurance companies and all these other companies haven't come to help the people in West. So I'm trying to figure out why is it so hard to help these people. And, you know, the same problem was up in New Jersey when they had the hurricanes, and New Jersey and New York had these problems.
I didn't know that.
That was part of the problem. That's part of the problem where the bridge was closed, because he was like, I'm not going to give you all the money that we're supposed to give you out to help fix up what was torn down if you don't come and board my campaign.
You talking about Governor Christie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Another story.
But I'm saying, and part of that was the money that, you know, money that was supposed to be given, that was given in totality for recovery effort from hurricane.
You know, I'm starting to really believe less and less in politics. Politicians, I shouldn't say politics, but I think it's called politricks and politicians, because when you get through, I mean, it just seems like when you get to a certain level, it's just like all these sharks and vultures are coming at you. And if you are weak at all, and I mean at all, you're sell out. I mean, you will sell out. I mean, and you know, it just seems like, I don't know, it's very little purity left in politics. It just that's just me. But Christie, I don't know that I believe anything he said recently since I heard about the bridge issue. It's just like, okay, that just threw everything else you ever said out the window. I mean, so it's just so much going on, and I'm looking at the Ukraine situation, and I'm going, okay, we got so many problems here at home. I just don't know that we have a right, because if I understood correctly, the Ukrainian government agreed to annex with Russia that Crimea section of the Ukraine. They agreed to that. If they agreed to that, who are we to go and tell the government over there what they can and can't do? I mean, by hook or by crook, you know, they decided to do that. If they did agree to that, how can we get in that? And I just think we're just going to be so hated across the world if we just keep, you know, getting involved in these conflicts, because a lot of people were saying that, you know, the West sent provocateurs over there to start this whole thing. And so if people really believe that we sent provocateurs over there and started the whole conflict, and then we get on the back end and say, well, you know, we're going to do this, it just kind of – nobody's just going to have any faith in us. And I just think going to war and getting in that conflict is just going to be World War III. That's just my belief. I mean, Russia's not afraid of us, I don't think. I mean, because if they were afraid of us, they wouldn't have intervened with the Iranian situation. But they did. Nobody else said they did. And so I don't think Russia's afraid of us. And I just think we need to be very careful before we poke the bear. I mean, you agree with that?
But, Gary, you're talking about cutting back on the military and cutting back on this. But I'm saying we still have the largest military than any other nation on this globe.
Mm.
Because there hadn't been any military cuts since, I can't remember when it was, you know, as far as cutting the military personnel. You know, they cut the B-2, they cut different, the B-1, different planes, but when they cut one, they actually started a new one. You know, a new plane, they cut one plane to start another plane. So it was never that we were just, we're not going to build anything, we're getting rid of everything. It's never been that case. See, the case was is that we're getting rid of this program because we got a new, more advanced, top-of-the-notch program, and we're going to sell this program to Israel, we're going to sell this program to all these other nations, because in Israel, all the planes that we built, the fighter jets, in Fort Hood, Texas, we used to train Israeli soldiers and other nation soldiers, Afghanistan, Iraqi soldiers, in Fort Bliss, Texas, to fly. So when you saw Israel fighting whoever, or they were in our fighter planes that we were testing.
Hmm.
That was like a proving ground.
Hmm. Wow. And then, But, AJ, the bottom line is, let me ask you this. You think we ought to get involved?
No, I really don't. I think just like they did in Africa and all these other places, they say sanctions. So you start sanctions on everybody. See, I think we have enough all between Mexico, Canada, and the United States that we can really not worry about Russia and all these other places for a minute. But see, the thing is the oil companies have began to make so much money that any, you know, if the oil prices, you know, if the barrel price of oil go up today, they're raising the price of oil today. If the prices go down tomorrow, they're lowering the price next week.
Mm.
I'm saying, and that's just their work. They're so used to making this money, and, you know, the government subsidized them with billions of dollars, the oil companies, where they've made so much money in the last 20 years that they could subsidize the government.
True.
But if you remember when President Obama was talking about stopping subsidizing the oil companies, everything got quiet for a minute. Nobody said anything like, "Hey, we know what side of bread I've read is buttered on. You know, let's not say anything. Let's not continue this conversation." So it just hushed for a minute, and he didn't do it. But I still think there's a lot of things that need to be done, and like the corporations, and you know, President Obama was talking about bringing up charges on some of those corporations in New York, on Wall Street, and all these other companies after they bailed them out. And they didn't use the bailout money for what they were trying to use it for. They gave bonuses.
Right.
They brought that up. You know, politicians was mad. Like, you can't tell them what to do with their money, but it's not their money.
Yeah, it's our money. And then, then when we found out they didn't do what they were supposed to do, and then somebody says, "Well, you can't send them to jail because they're too big to fail." I mean, just crazy stuff. I mean, like, the bank, it seems like we're just run by big banks now, foreign banks. I mean, that's just me, yeah. But that's where
that's partially it, but if you think about it, after they gave all the money to the banks were supposed to use it for those paper loans that they had messed all these people out of these houses and messed up the housing market for so long. That's what the money was supposed to be used for. But what happened is the banks saw other banks were trying to do what was right and kind of failing and didn't have, so they went and bought all these banks, just like Chase and, you know, Bank of America and Wells Fargo. They went and bought all these other banks. So whatever bank you used to bank with, after a while you got a letter saying, okay, we're going to be an annex of Bank of America, or annex of Wells Fargo, or annex of somebody. It wasn't going to be your usual bank.
Isn't it going to eventually go down to three or four big banks?
Everything might be like in the movie where Sylvester Stallone and where every restaurant, you know, it was in limos driving up to Taco Bell.
Mhm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what the bank's gonna be like. You know, it's gonna be one bank, but they're gonna have different names. Just, you know, how corporations when they first, after NAFTA was passed, all these corporations start buying up these little companies. Leaving them under the little company name, but they were owned by the corporation, so you really didn't know until later on when AT&T just took over everything, and you're like, AT&T is this and that. So they sold their biggest company of Lucent Technologies and moved to Matamoros, Texas, almost in Mexico, and got rid of all the union workers.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was the first company that I've ever seen where my sister and my brother-in-law had thousands of shares of stock, AT&T stock, that was splitting because it was like $70-something a share. It went up to like $80-something a share, and they were splitting stock, and they had all this money, and they knew they was getting this money. And then AT&T sold out to Lucent Technologies and switched their stock from AT&T stock to Lucent Technologies stock, and their stock went down from $70-something a share to almost $7 a share.
Oh, my God.
And they're trying to figure out what happened. And that was before AT&T started buying up all these mobile companies and doing all these other stuff that AT&T came out with, the biggest company. Yeah, they're the biggest company because they screwed so many Americans in the process and nobody said anything.
I never knew that. Okay, Jim, we're going to get to the last topic, y'all. And somebody said we could say the best for last, but it just turned out that way. You know, and I, again, I'm not homophobic. Got gay relatives, got gay friends. And I could care less what anybody does with their life. I mean, really, I feel as a Christian, you know, I hope you make your peace with God because, you know, if we're going to leave part of the book, we got a whole book. But that's it. I'm not going to even try to explain anymore because, like I've already given you a disclaimer, I'm not homophobic. But that's it. Is there a gay agenda? Is there a new gay agenda? And the reason I say that is, every time I turn on the TV, there's commercials that seem to be, you know, with a gay agenda. There seems to be television shows, the radio advertisement, you know, plays, the big screen. What the heck is going on? And why do I, and I'm a straight person, why do I as a straight person feel like there's a gay agenda that's being pushed on me? Do you feel that at all? And I'm not, you know, I'm not even making this up because look on the billboards, look at, just stop and open up some stuff, some magazines, look for yourself. Do you agree with that, AJ?
But okay, I'm saying I would take it one step further. I'm saying I don't think there's, I'm not saying there's a gay agenda or anything. I just think there's always been an attack on the black man, the head of the household in the black family. There's always been an attack on him, even when they began all these shows, they had all these women superheroes and stuff happening to me. And I'm saying, I was looking at the way the TV shows were elevated, you know, when they started making women superheroes and having women do all these, and when they started making more women principals than there were men in the schools. And I'm saying, this was a problem I had before all this that you're talking about. You have all these young black boys raised in single-family households that's raised by a woman going to a school where they see a woman over the school where they don't see that many men that look like them. So we began losing generations of boys because they didn't see what a man was supposed to be or look like. So to me, this is perpetuating that because you already have this big thing where you have so many black men lost their jobs. And so, you know, after that last little stint where the government, you know, stocks lost, companies start firing, and we got, what, 50% of our black boys are in jail or prison, so once they get out, they really can't get a good job.
But see, the gay agenda, I disagree with you in that. The gay agenda doesn't seem to be about color. I mean, because,
but I'm saying it's about, to me, it's like it's taking the emphasis away from the, because I think at one time we were growing communities. We were, you know, trying to get all these people, you know, all these people start putting up what they call them, the institutes where they were trying to help the boys. And I just thought it was an attack on the black men at first.
Hmm.
I guess that's the attack on the black men.
Let me give you some examples, and y'all follow along and see, don't you agree with me? If you take a look, in order to be successful in Hollywood, you eventually got to put a dress on. Now, across the board, about black actors, we can say Wesley Snipes, we can say Jamie Foxx, we can say, you know, what's the Wayans boy, you know, you just name it across the board. I think I can probably pretty much name everybody but Denzel, you know, that just put on a dress, you know, that's in Hollywood, you know, the big A-listers. You know, and so you're like, why do you have to put a dress on in order to, you know, but that's just, you know, I've noticed that. And then all the female actresses, you know, why is it in order for a movie to be sexy, a woman's got to kiss another woman? When did that become so sexy? And then you look at the wardrobe of just what clothes are being pushed. We're talking about men with skin-tight jeans on or the leggings. You know, y'all seen Lil Wayne wear clothes like that. What's his name? Kim Kardashian's boyfriend, Kanye West. We're talking about the shirts that are, like, super tight. And why does a man's shirt have to be, like, so tight? And why does he have to have a suit? So just say it. Why does he have to have a suit on that's just so fitted that he can't gain even 5 pounds? You know, his pants are like tailored, you know, really narrow. And this is a, you know, that style was back in the 60s, don't get me wrong. But now it's come back and it has a different flavor to it, you know. And so.
No. It wasn't no sagging skinny jeans in the 60s. I'm sorry.
No. Remember when people like Marvin Gaye and like, you know, that group, they used to wear the suits that were really tailored to fit? Remember those suits?
Yeah, but I'm saying the skinny jeans and those suits are different. That's a whole different animal.
No. Skinny jeans are one thing. Leggings is another thing. We're talking about the suits now that are tailored to be like super, you know, like you can't even breathe in them really because if you gain 5 pounds.
I'm saying they're making the suits just like skinny jeans. That's why I was saying skinny jeans. They're making the pants just like they're just skinny pants, I guess.
Yeah.
We call them skinny jeans. But I'm saying we had straight leg pants and we had the baggies. And that's what we had, you know. So the straight legs was the nice fitting suit to where it was nice and boot cut or shoe cut. But it wasn't skinny. It wasn't as skinny like skinny is now.
This is just, I mean, it's just, like, super narrow. And then you look at, you know, and don't get me wrong, I think it's great when a man gets a manicure. I think it's great when a man gets a pedicure. But I don't want any man who's getting more manicures and pedicures than me. I mean, seriously. I mean, it's nice to be well-groomed. But it's getting to the place, like, you know, I went into a nail salon not long ago, and this guy was, like, getting more perks. Seriously, than the women, you know, and give me the scrub and give me the this and give me the, and I was like, wow, you know, he's spending more time in here than us. And so it's just this push. It's like really starting to feel uncomfortable, like they're feminizing, like we're feminizing women. I mean, we're feminizing men. Does it feel like that to you?
Oh, yeah. It does feel like that to me, for sure, because I'm saying I see men sometimes that I really have to. It's not that I question them. It's just that I'm like I don't understand how, you know, because I think there has to be some masculine men somewhere.
Yeah.
There has to be some, and you have to teach your boys how to be men. And I think now is that we have. That's why I'm saying attack on the black man, because we have so many families without men being there, and then we have so many places that boys are going where they don't see men there, like the schools and other places where they have women in charge.
Exactly,
so
women
principals. So
you know, exactly.
I'm saying you see the sagging and skinny jeans sagging and the other things. It doesn't equate that. That's popular. That's what they think men are supposed to wear.
I agree. And you know, another thing
and
someone
it came
said.
From a jailhouse culture. You know, because the sagging jailhouse, that was a jailhouse thing.
True. And now, you know, everybody wants to sag, which really, like they say, that started in prison. You know, another thing that I've seen is, like, you know, when you get through, I heard someone say every show, every hit show has got to have somebody black and a gay guy. You know, like a show can't be funny unless it's got a gay guy in it. Another thing I noticed is, like, the Pope was embracing homosexuality. Since when did the Pope embrace homosexuality? Come on. Remember the military? Huh?
Well, I'm saying as far as the Pope, you know, I'm saying they've had problems for years. They probably paid more than a couple of $1 billion to families.
But you couldn't get one of them. You couldn't get a Pope to stand up and say, you know what? Why don't y'all just leave the homosexual agenda alone and just let, you know, everybody be? You just couldn't get a Pope to say that.
I'm in agreement, but I'm saying it's always been an issue. I'm just saying it's always been an issue with the Catholic Church that nobody wanted to bring up. Nobody wanted to say anything about it.
Definitely. Oh, I agree. I 100% agree. And then remember the military repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
Yep.
Remember? Yeah. Remember the president, y'all, go ahead and call it like it is. Remember the president basically was the one that said, yeah, hey, listen, there's nothing wrong with gay marriage. You know, it's okay, you know, which he did. You know, and so it's just some weird things going on. And I'll be honest with you, I've gone into a lot of stores recently where I was surprised that I could tell the person behind the counter was gay. Because back in the day, every now and then you see somebody, they gay. But now you'll see the woman, and she'll be very what do you call it, Bull Dykish, if you will, with that look, with the short haircut and the look.
Yeah, but
and the men clothes on, or you will see a guy, and he will be that, you know, that flaming gay kind.
Very feminine, exactly. But
I'm sorry.
But one thing, Carrie, when I had a conversation with some people when President Obama was going up to South Carolina, North Carolina, he was talking about gay marriage. See, my problem with everything is that we say we want freedom of religion and freedom of speech in America. See, my overall problem is that anybody say anything of what they believe about any situation, if it's different from the American agenda at present, it's bad. You're negative. You lose your job.
Exactly.
And then you have all these politicians that are making whatever their belief is law.
Mm.
So my thing is, I think everybody should be able to do, say, or be whatever they want to be, and you shouldn't hold somebody else, you know, accountable or hold somebody else, I guess, up for them, you saying their opinion, because America is supposed to be this place where you can voice your opinion. I don't have to agree with you to agree with you. You know what I'm saying? I don't have to agree with you to not, me not agreeing with you don't mean that I dislike you. Don't mean that I'm against you. That just means that on this point right here, I don't agree with you.
Mm-hmm. And I agree. Like you get in trouble if someone comes to you and say, if you're a preacher or a priest, I want you to have our gay wedding here. We want to have our gay wedding here. If the pastor or the priest says, well, no, we don't do gay weddings, then all of a sudden this whole gay community comes out and bashes this preacher. Or in the case of the wedding cake, the lady who had the cake business, and a gay couple came in and said they wanted her to make their wedding cake. And she said, oh, I'm sorry, that's against my religion. I can't do it. They ran the lady out of business. And so I think the problem that I have is I'm black. There's nothing I'm ever going to do to change that. And so when I leave the house every day, I don't ever immediately, everybody that I come upon, I say, hey, I'm Carrie, I'm black. Because to me it's just obvious I'm black.
That's like me saying, how you doing? My name is AJ. I'm straight.
You see what I'm saying?
I'm in agreement with you. But see, my point is this: I don't really think it's that way. I think the problem is nobody wants anybody to not. They want everybody to not say what they think, and the people that have power and they believe something different, they're trying to change laws to make their beliefs law, so you don't have to say like they think, they're trying to make it law. You know, just
but
like
I just gave you 10 examples.
Just like all that. Huh?
I'm sorry, for me to come up with 10 examples, doesn't that kind of tell you that, first of all, this is how I feel about it. I'm a grown person. Nobody's going to be able to persuade me to do anything I don't want to do. But what I'm concerned about is my nieces and nephews that may be more impressionable. You know what I'm saying? So I would hate to think that they would be influenced by an agenda, you know, rather than being left to make up their minds for themselves. And so I think that's where I have the problem with. I don't think that I'm concerned that any grown person is going to be turned from straight to gay, but I think I'm concerned that there's very impressionable young people who may not understand the particular lifestyle and all that comes with it. So I think that anytime you're bombarding people, from every direction with an agenda, you know, and they're impressionable, I think that's wrong. That's just
I'm saying we're almost saying the same thing. I guess the point I'm making is that when you have people in fear of voicing their opinion because they could lose their job or something could happen to them, and I'm saying everybody don't agree on everything. And I think everybody can have whatever conversation they want to have. And when you have people in fear of voicing their opinion, and when you have all these other things that were, I'm saying, just like in the media, you ask people, what was it, Sam, I can't think of the guy's name, that's the gay football player that's coming out this year from Missouri.
Okay.
And they was asking all these players what they thought. And, you know, some people said their opinion, but a lot of people, you would see them shy away from the question because they're ESPN analysts, they're all this. So they really couldn't say anything. You know, it's like I can't even say what I'm thinking. I got to say something polite or something good about it, or I might lose my job. I'm saying, to me, that's the fear. That's the problem. The problem
and,
is,
and you know what I thought about that, and I did see that young man's press conference, and you know what my first thought was? Who asked you? I mean, I just didn't understand why it was absolutely necessary to say I'm a free agent and, by the way, I'm gay, because nobody asked you. And so I'm sure he's probably not the only gay football player, and I just don't see the need to announce it. Like I said, I wouldn't walk up to you and say, hi, pleased to meet you, I'm Carrie and I'm black. And so I just see the need.
I think Deion was on a Senior Hall show the other day. And a senior asked him something about it. Deion said, look, he said, I played on like 4 or 5 teams. Every team I've been on, there's been a gay player and it hadn't been a problem.
See?
So I'm saying, but what I'm saying is, see, the thing is, it's not what it is, it's what they're trying to make you say.
Mm.
There's no honest opinions out there on anything, because your honest opinion would get you fired. Like you say, the lady lost her business because they start picking her business, because I can't believe a certain way without you infringing on my beliefs. But America is supposed to be.
And I'll go there with you. This is the thing. You know, like I said, I'm not homophobic at all. I think I love all people, all races, all colors, all nationalities, you name it, you know, whatever your sexual preference is, I do, because I don't have a problem with people. But the problem I have is whenever somebody says that they don't like me because I'm black, I'm like, okay, thank you. I can deal with a Klan member as long as they don't approach me with a sheet on. Because, see, when you have the sheet on, then I don't know who you truly are. But if you approach me and you say I'm a racist and I don't like you, I can say, okay, I can deal with that. And so I think the problem I have with the gay, what I call agenda, is if you at all say I don't agree, then all of a sudden the wrath of God falls on you. And I think that's wrong. That's bullyish, in my opinion, because people have a right all day to say they don't like me because I'm black. And I say, okay. So if people say,
and we've made it to where what do they call it, being politically correct.
Yeah.
See, we've made politically correct almost a law, or made it to where it's mandatory.
Yeah. And I think that's wrong. I think it's wrong to say I think in most cases people are not saying I hate you as a person. They may say they hate the lifestyle. And I think if someone says I'm not comfortable with the gay lifestyle and I don't like the gay lifestyle, I don't think that's a reason to boycott a business. I don't think it's a reason to run somebody out of business because they say they don't want to make you a cake. This is what I'll say to that couple that ran those people out of business. Listen. Anybody who was honest enough to tell me that they did not like my lifestyle and they didn't want to make me a cake, trust me, I wouldn't spend my money to get them to make me a cake. It's got to be too many cake makers in that particular city for me to get mad at one who was honest enough to tell me the truth that they didn't agree with my lifestyle. You know, and so if they were not comfortable with making me a cake, I definitely wouldn't force them to do it. You know, so I'm going to leave it right
there. That's the thing. I'm saying, just like, you know, politicians saying, you know, the Republicans can say anything they want to say, taking America back, how horrible the president is, how he's, you know, whatever. But when you say something about them and you talk about them, I think at one time they were saying there was a war against women, and Republicans were mad, but they, every law they was passing was all these men talking about what a woman could do with her body, which shouldn't be in their mouth anyway.
Mm.
Why are you going to make a phone what a woman can do with her body when you don't have a clue? You're not a doctor. That's my thing. It's everything has gone to that binge, gone that far to where everybody can say whatever they want to say as long as it's in the area of political correctness, and you can't say anything about it because then you become a racist, you become homophobic, you become whatever it is against them just because you're voicing your opinion. And I say it's wrong in America to have opinions anymore.
And I think that's going in the wrong direction. I think whenever you can't, and I don't mean, you know, voicing your opinion in a harsh way, but I think whenever you can't be honest with people, I think, you know, without feeling a backlash, I think we're headed in the wrong direction. That's just me. Hey, this has been a great show.
Tim Hardaway lost his job. Tim Hardaway
Who
lost
did?
His job probably 3 or 4 years ago when they asked him something about gay lifestyle. He was talking about he was a Christian and whatever he said. Next day, he was off the air. He was gone.
And that's happening way too often. I mean, that's happening way too often. And I just see that, you know, I don't know. I mean, we got to look at where we're headed. I mean, because, you know, the thing is, people have a right to feel like they feel. People, I mean, you know, and they should be able to voice that. And we should not feel a bullyish type of hovering over people, like, you know, if you don't like this or about me and I'm gay and, you know, I'm going to go get all my gay friends and we're just going to run you out of business. That's just that's not a Christ-like spirit. I'm just saying. And I felt sorry for the cake baker who that happened to, but I thought the straight community should have rallied behind them and kept her in business. That's just me, because I just thought
I think the problem was with, what's the chicken place? Chick-fil-A.
I don't know.
Chick-fil-A mm-hmm. I read the history because, you know, I really wasn't cutting for Chick-fil-A, you know, because I don't like it. If I'm going to eat chicken, I want a real chicken sandwich or a big piece of chicken. I don't even know if it's a chicken sandwich. But, you know, ever since they've been in existence, they was closed on Sundays for family, made that family day, which they didn't say they was off on Sundays for church, which probably was the reason they were off, but they call it family day. But I'm saying, you know, a lot of times you can go and look at the history of something and say, okay, these people have always done this, so whatever they say is going to be in this vein of their religious doctrine, or this vein of the Bible they believe in, or this from a Mormon, or this one from a perspective of a Muslim. But the thing is they should be allowed to believe in whatever religion they believe in and quote whatever scripture they want to quote, and that shouldn't affect you in any way if you don't believe that way or if you don't agree. But I think we've made it to where when somebody disagrees with us, it affects us to where we want to retaliate and hold that person hostage for their belief system or for their belief or for their statements, and I think that's the problem.
And I think we shouldn't do that. AJ, thank you for a great show. Listen, AJ, Christopher, wherever you are, I hope you're flying safely and get back to your destination tonight safely. AJ, you and I held it down, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we did. Listen, y'all, we got to get out of here. We didn't win over. But tonight we just wanted to slow it down a little bit, talk about what's been going on in the news. We just wanted to catch up on some of the news headlines that we've been seeing that just kind of jumped out there at us. But next Friday we'll be back here, same time, same bat channel, Center Stage, talking about what's going on in the world. So if you'd like to drop us a line, tell us what you think of how the show is going. If you like us, you hate us, we don't care. We just want to know what you think. Send us an email at centerstageradio@yahoo.com. That's centerstageradio@yahoo.com. Okay, guys, we got to get out of here. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.